It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You may be at a point where you need to buy a vehicle. Maybe it's the first one, or you're replacing one that's no longer running as it should. The next repair is too big to justify. You've been there, right? And there's space for your question as we talk about cars. Call in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jamie Page Deaton is back. She is editor-in-chief of Car Talk. Jamie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so what have you been test driving lately?
Oh, I have been test driving pretty much anything and everything. I've been in a Ram TRX, which is a very, very large off-road truck. That's the kind that you pull up next to in traffic and you're like, ah, what is that guy thinking? And then you get behind the wheel and you totally get it because you feel so cool. I've also been driving a Subaru Crosstrek, which is just a great little all-wheel drive car, excellent in terms of safety and just practicality. And then recently I was in a BMW i6. That's an EV. It was $113,000. And while it was really, really, you know, nice, I just really couldn't see what was setting it apart from the Kia EV6, which is only, and I'm making air quotes around the only, about $50,000. Wow. So the entire gambit has been in my driveway recently.
How important is it for you to keep trying a bunch of different cars that keep coming out on the market?
It's really important because you can, you know, anytime you get into a new car, right, it is going to be nicer than your current car just because it's new. And so by testing everything across every vehicle class, you really get that sense of comparison. So you can say, hey, this is a nice car, but this other one is better because maybe it has, you know, a better and more logical infotainment system that isn't buggy, or maybe it just has better acceleration or honestly is easier to park. So by living with different cars and cars that just run the entire spectrum, I'm able to get a better sense of, is this car going to work for the average driver? Or, you know, if it's a car like that Ram TRX, you know, taking it off road, saying to myself, all right, how is this going to work for a you know, specialized use, somebody who wants a big off-road powerful truck, because you know the looking at that and reviewing that is very different than reviewing a Subaru Crosstrek because the end user is very different.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you mentioned buggy infotainment system, and my mind immediately goes to chips. Is there still supply chain issues? What about the systems that are running these cars and the chips involved?
So the chip shortage is largely starting to work out. So that is very good news if you're in the market for a new car. What is really kind of not good news is a lot of the systems that consumers have gotten used to or maybe were thinking about for your next new car, like Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. For people who haven't been around a new car, these are systems there. You basically just plug your phone in and your phone is the infotainment system. You can use Google Maps or you can use Waze instead of the manufacturer's navigation system. You can use Spotify really easily. And of course, you still have, you know, your regular AM, FM and satellite radio. But for a lot of people, they prefer these systems, especially because they do allow for text by voice, which can help keep your eyes on the road a little bit. But Chevy recently announced that they're no longer going to use Apple CarPlay. And they're going to go back to their own systems. And so it'll be really interesting to see how consumers react to that because, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto have proven to be incredibly popular with consumers and new car buyers to the point where there's now an aftermarket where you can just buy these systems and put them in your existing car if your car is too old or didn't come with it. And Ford even came out and said, you know what? These systems have us beat. We're going to keep offering this, and we're not going to put any more effort into developing our own infotainment systems because Android and Apple create something that's great and consumers like it. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Wow, lots going on in that infotainment sandbox there. So you mentioned Kia at that $50,000 price point, and that's really aligning with this latest automotive analyst data that finds that the average transaction price of a new vehicle is right around that $48,000 mark at the moment. But the average price of a new car has been rising for almost 2 years. Why is this going on? Why is the price of new vehicles kept going up?
Well, I mean, it's really been going up for a lot longer than 2 years. And the initial reason was because consumers wanted more in their cars. They wanted more safety features. They wanted more infotainment features, you know, little things that really do add up, like going for heated seats, which are now becoming standard. They used to be a luxury option. And so that has driven the rise in price. But within the pandemic and the supply chain issues and the switch from automakers to new technologies, that has also helped to really drive up the price. So whereas, you know, a hybrid powertrain used to be a little bit of an anomaly, now lots of cars have hybrid powertrain systems and consumers don't even notice until they really look at the price tag. And so this is a trend that we really don't see stopping, which is, you know, it's just disconcerting for anybody who's in the market for a new car. The other thing that we're seeing too is, you know, demand was really pent up for a while, which drove transaction prices higher because there were, you know, supply chain issues, which led to a short supply in cars. So while we might see it start to level off a little bit, as long as consumers are continuing to demand high-end safety features, lots of comfort and convenience features in their cars, and as long as automakers are exploring, you know, alternative powertrain systems, they're going to pass those research costs on to the consumers. And we're going to see the prices continue to rise, although hopefully not quite as much as they have been or not as steeply as they have been over the past 2 years.
Okay. Talking about buying and selling cars, Jamie Page Deaton, the editor-in-chief of Car Talk, on top of the trends and the models and what to think about here. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Cara in Menominee starts us off. Cara, hi.
Hi. I have a question about buying a new vehicle. I have been a serial buyer of Subaru Outback for my last three cars, and I am in love with this vehicle. But my husband doesn't fit very well in it. Something about, I think, sitting down into the seats, it hurts his hips on long drives. And this is our long drive vehicle. And we've also been looking at maybe moving to a hybrid. I don't think we're quite ready for electric vehicle just because we use it for long drives and we don't really want to have to plan out, you know, where we're stopping and all that. But would you have a recommendation for a vehicle that would be similar to a Subaru Outback size, but maybe a little bit more comfortable for my husband and possibly hybrid?
Jamie.
That is a great question. And what people, I think, need to realize is like that sitting down and getting down into a car really does, you know, can impact people who have maybe, you know, back problems, hip problems, limited mobility. And so what I always recommend is when you're testing cars out, see if you could just slide in, you know, find a seat that is at hip height. But honestly, as you know, Cara, as you were talking, my mind immediately went to the Toyota RAV4. It's available as gasoline, hybrid, plug-in hybrid, which is absolutely my favorite because you can plug it in at home and around town, you're on electricity. But once you're out of electricity, it's a gas engine and you fill it up at the gas station. So it's perfect for long drives. In terms of size, it is a little bit taller than the Outback, not quite as long, but similar amounts of cargo space, if that's your concern there. So that would immediately be my thought, is to go try out the Toyota RAV4. If that doesn't quite work for you, the Ford Edge is another good option there, because it is really, really comfortable seats. And it has that height again, where you're not sitting down into it, and it has decent cargo space, not quite as much as the Outback, because really the Outback is, you know, just a huge cavern of space there. The other thing to look at, if you want to stay with Subaru, though it's not available as a hybrid, would be the Forester. The Forester is a little bit higher than the Outback, and so that might help with your husband's sitting down issue. I will say, though, depending on what trim of the Forester that you get, those base trims, they're a little bit more Spartan than the Outback. So on long rides, I find that the Forester gets a little bit loud, which I personally find tiring, but I think it's definitely worth a test drive if you're a loyal Subaru buyer and want to stay within that brand.
Cara, thanks for the call. We have Jamie Page Deaton, editor-in-chief of Car Talk, as we discuss the models, the prices, how to buy in this market. Join in any point. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we look at demand for used cars, forecast to rise as the average transaction price for a new car, according to Edmunds data, now around $48,000. We have Jamie Page Deaton to sort this all out, fielding your vehicle market questions. Let's go to John in Green Bay. John, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Bring up the fact I have a 2020 Dodge Durango all-wheel drive. And I did not know this before buying the vehicle, that if you get a flat tire on an all-wheel drive vehicle, even though my vehicle has a full-size spare tire, I cannot put that spare tire on that vehicle and replace it, you know, permanently if the tire that got flat is not repairable. I've been cautioned by two different technicians that it will damage your transfer case and transmission if you have tires of unequal circumference on your vehicle if it's an all-wheel drive.
John, thank you for that. Jamie, what are your insights there?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's often an unforeseen cost that people have with all-wheel drive vehicles. Basically, you know, all-wheel drive is a system that sends power to the wheels that have traction. So it's different from four-wheel drive in that four-wheel drive sends equal amounts of power to all four wheels. All-wheel drive shifts the power depending on which wheels have traction there. And what that means is, though, is if you have tires of varying circumferences, then it's going to mess with the system. Like, they have to be very precisely balanced. That's when you get an all-wheel drive vehicle, you actually need to replace all four tires at the same time to ensure that they are the same size and have the same amount of wear. So that full-size spare that you have there are a couple of ways around it. It's a little bit of a hack. And, you know, if you're handy and you want to try it, you can keep your tire, you know, rotate through your tires if you have a full-size spare. So, you know, every so often, take one of your tires off, put the spare on, and then that tire you took off becomes your spare. That is a kind of a big pain. And, you know, that's also if you're not doing it, you know, regularly with, you know, equal intervals on all tires, you're taking a little bit of a risk there. But it does help to ensure that you're getting equal amounts of wear. But, you know, John is absolutely right. This is often something that people don't anticipate when they get all-wheel drive cars. And that is, you know, there's unique wear on the tires due to the system. But ultimately, you know, people get all-wheel drive because they want that extra assurance. They want that extra traction and, you know, bad weather and things like that. But what people do need to realize, though, is all-wheel drive is there to help you get going. It's the quality of your tires that are going to help you actually stop. And that's what's going to prevent an accident. So don't feel like just because you have all-wheel drive that, you know, you're invincible. Really pay attention to the tires, that your wear on your tires. And especially in snowy weather, just because you have all-wheel drive, that is not enough. You know, especially I think, you know, if you're up in Green Bay, getting winter tires is a really, really good idea, because the tires are what's going to get you to stop. And that stopping power is what's going to prevent most accidents.
John, thank you so much. We'll continue to go even further north. Laura now in Duluth, Minnesota. Laura, what is your situation?
Hi, I purchased a 2021 Grand Jeep Cherokee line in January a year ago, and I've been having motor issues. It's been in the shop three times now. And this third time, they're telling me the noises coming from it are normal. It only has 27,000 miles. I've compared other vehicles, similar model, and the motor, and it does not sound the same. Just trying to figure out what I need to do.
Laura, thank you. 27,000 miles on this Grand Jeep Cherokee Long.
Yeah, that is really disappointing, especially when you're going for a new car and the Grand Jeep Cherokee Long. Like, that is not an inexpensive vehicle. So I'm really sorry that you're dealing with this. First, I would make sure that you're taking it to multiple technicians to really get a second opinion there before they tell you if it's normal or not. The other thing that I would do is I would go to safercar.gov And I would put in your VIN. Your VIN is your vehicle identification number. It should be on your registration, and it should also be in a little window on your windshield, you know, on the driver's side, and see if there are any recalls there, because that is one thing where if there's something like a loose pin that could be causing engine noise, that's where people can go and report those issues. There's also a form there on safercar.gov where you can report issues like that. If the car is rendered, you know, unusable, and I apologize that I'm not up on, you know, lemon laws in Minnesota, but there are states, some states have laws where if a car is new and it's requiring, you know, too many repairs, you do have recourse. So I would look into that, but first go and get, you know, a second or a third opinion about those noises. Take it to, you know, multiple, you know, both Jeep dealerships and independent shops to see if you can get a sense of, you know, if what the technicians are telling you is absolutely correct. And also be on the lookout for recalls. Make a complaint at safercar.gov because you might not be the only person having this issue. And then, you know, if you're still not happy with the service you're getting, look at lemon laws in Minnesota. That's a last resort. And it's a real shame that you might have to go down that path. But ultimately, as consumers, we have to protect ourselves.
Laura, thank you for the call. You know, that brings up reliability. Are there car brands that are the most reliable over time? What should we look for in reliability?
Well, yeah, this always cracks me up because the car brand that tends to do the best in reliability is Porsche. And I'm sure we'd all love to be driving Porsches, but it's
well, back here on planet Earth.
You know? Yes, back here on planet Earth. Yeah, there are a number of brands that do pretty well for reliability, but I should point out that no brand is perfect, right? Any brand can have, you know, an issue at the factory that day, a bad batch of parts from a supplier. But overall, looking at brands like Hyundai, Hyundai has come a really, really long way in terms of reliability. I remember, you know, when I was growing up, Hyundai and Kia both were a little bit of a joke when it came to cars. And now they are turning out some of the best cars on the market and some of the most reliable cars on the market. So if you're looking to save a little bit of money there, I mean, they're still, you know, very, I mean, I say again, affordable in air quotes, because this is the current car market that we're talking about. But Hyundai and Kia tend to do very, very well if you don't have Porsche money. And beyond that, you know, kind of old standbys like Honda and Toyota tend to do very well also. And another thing to think about with reliability, and this is kind of a little bit of an old chestnut, but, you know, it is a pretty good idea. If you're really concerned about reliability, don't buy the first year of a new model or the first year of a new engine. Let the car company and, you know, kind of other people who are driving it shake out any issues there. So even if you have your heart set on a brand new, you know, whatever it is that's brand new for that year, if you can wait, you'll likely find out a lot more issues there. And then the other thing that you can do if you're considering a car is go up and Google, you know, the make, the year, make, model of the car and problems. So if you're looking at, you know, a 2021 Jeep Grand Cherokee L, go and Google that with problems, and that'll take you to owners forums. And what you'll find there is people who are listing all the issues that they have. And in a lot of cases, the cost to fix those issues. And so you can really get a sense of, okay, what's going on with this car? Is it something that's relatively simple, like, oh, you know, the volume knob of the radio pops off? Or is it something that's a little bit you know, that deserves a little bit more research, like the engine makes noises and the technicians are telling me it's normal, but I don't think it is.
Jamie Page Deaton, editor-in-chief of Car Talk. Let's go to Steve in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I have two cars.
Oh, Steve, you're breaking up. Can you hear us?
Car. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, carry on.
You hear me?
Yes.
Yes, my grandfather used to tell me when I was a young man, he said, if you're going to buy a used car, make certain that you buy a used car that was expensive during its time of purchase and when it was manufactured, because people have a likelihood to keep the maintenance up, change the oil routinely, and, you know, invest money in their, you know, in their purchase. But my other comment is my brother owns an automotive shop, and he says that cars are coming up north. They're changing the titles to Ohio and bringing them up north that were in the floods.
Oh, dear. Flooded vehicles. Steve, thank you so much. Jamie, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a constant problem. Anytime there's a natural disaster where there's a lot of flooding, you know, whether it's in Houston or Florida, or, you know, I know I used to live in Iowa, we had floods all the time. A lot of those salvage cars will be moved to other areas and people will attempt to sell them. And you never want to get a car that's been in a flood. And there are a couple of things that you can do to check when you're looking at a used car for flood damage. One is open up the engine bay, open up the trunk. You might be able to see that there is, in fact, a water line where there's different colors between, you know, the lower and the upper part of the engine bay. So that's number one. Number two is if the carpet is a lot newer than the car, they are probably trying to hide flood damage there. So if you're looking and you're like, huh, the seats are like brand new, but the car has, you know, 70,000 miles on it.
Something
I would walk away.
Might be a mess. Car Talk editor-in-chief Jamie Page Deaton, our guide here, calling with questions 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Drivers try to keep their cars on the road longer. Average age just hit 12 and a half years. That's a record. Data published this week by S&P Global Mobility. Jamie Page Deaton is here, editor-in-chief of Car Talk, fielding your questions at 800-642-1234. Ronald now in Dubuque, Iowa. Ronald, you're in the pickup truck market. Hi, Ronald. Can you hear us?
Yep.
All right. Go ahead.
I was wondering, with the rising cost of pickup trucks, which don't seem to be built for work, you know, and I'm never going to be able to afford one of those now. Would there be a demand for a cheaper utilitarian pickups for actual working people?
Ronald, thank you. Without all those bells and whistles, Jamie.
You would think so. But unfortunately, for people who actually need trucks for work, automakers have discovered that positioning trucks as a lifestyle vehicle is much more profitable for them. So if you think about like a automakers still do offer work trims that are very bare bones on their trucks, but those trims are still relatively expensive. And if you're trying to use a truck both as, say, a work truck and as a family vehicle, so you need, you know, a full extended cab, those are still pretty expensive. But what automakers have discovered is it costs them roughly the same to, you know, build a basic work truck, as well as, you know, that same truck that has more of a luxurious interior and all sorts of, you know, bells and whistles and tech, but they can charge, you know, twice as much for that more expensive truck because it's positioned as a lifestyle vehicle. And so it has pushed the prices of trucks just on average up overall. I think I saw recently that average truck prices were getting close to $60,000. But, you know, if you still look and you go specifically, and there are dealers who do specialize in this, if you go specifically in dealers who look and do fleet sales, they will have work trim trucks. Or if you go to a dealer, if there's a truck that you're interested in and say, look, I just need the work trim. A lot of those are just really bare bones, basic. I think they have power windows now. Just a couple of years ago, they were still selling them with crank windows. But you can find a little bit of a deal there, as long as, you know, you're willing to do some legwork. And just keep in mind that, yeah, they're just expensive like everything else. And it's really, I think, just difficult on your average everyday consumer who needs a truck to get work done and not just because they want to feel cool.
Is there any type of discount in the used market here on these work trucks, or do they maintain their value?
Well, no, not really. Okay. And so there's two issues there. One is trucks are incredibly popular. I mean, the Ford F-150 is the best-selling vehicle in America. As Americans, we just can't get enough of trucks. And so trucks do tend to hold their value there. The other thing is, if you're going and you're looking for a work truck and you're buying a used one, odds are that one has been used for work, which means it's been used very, very tough. And, you know, if you're lucky and you found a good one that's been really maintained, then, you know, you might might be able to find a little bit of a deal there. But in a lot of cases, if somebody's buying these, you know, for a fleet or something like that, and they're just turning them over every couple of years, they may not have been maintained as well. So it's like any used car purchase, you want to just really do your homework on it. But just overall, the demand for trucks just really hasn't slowed. And that means that people who really need them end up having to pay more than they probably should for them.
Ronald, thank you so much for the call. Staying on the pickups here, Nate in Durand called and is looking for advice on the Rivian, the all-electric pickup. Do you have any recommendations or tips on the Rivian?
Well, so I have not driven the Rivian, so just to be absolutely clear there. That said, I've spent a lot of time with them at auto shows, and I have friends who have them, and they absolutely love them. They are really, really just kind of cool in terms of what you can get. They have this little section there, because there's no engine and things like that, between the back seat and the bed, where it's a perfect area to put long things like, you know, cross-country skis or oars or things like that. Rivian even sells these really fun kits. So if you're going to use it for camping, you can pull an entire working kitchen out on just a little slider. And it is so, so cool. And then the other thing that I love about the Rivian, and this goes also for the Ford F-150 Lightning, which is an electric pickup truck, is like all electric cars, they have a front trunk. And so what is great about that is if you're a truck driver and you need to go to the grocery store, say you're going to Costco or Sam's Club and you've got the whole family in there, and then you're driving home and it starts to rain. Well, all of your groceries, all of your stuff gets wet. And so having a frunk is so great for that. Or, you know, you're taking just a road trip or heading to the airport. You can put your luggage in the frunk and it's not exposed to the air. And so that to me just takes, you know, makes that truck so, you know, that much more useful. I will say one thing, though, about the Rivian. The headlights are, in my view, just kind of hilarious and cartoon-like. They make the truck look really, really cute, but it has these round headlights that look like cartoon eyes. And so every time I see one on the road, it just kind of puts a smile on my face. But I also know that if you're looking for a really kind of traditionally styled truck, those headlights can be off-putting for a lot of people.
Do you know anything about back orders or demand on these trucks? Are they getting more off the assembly line?
They are getting more off the assembly line, but they did have a lot of pre-orders. So they are just starting to catch up. And the other thing to remember, too, is, you know, for Rivian or Lucid or any of these new, these new EV companies that are hitting the market, it's really, really hard to build a car company. It is really, really difficult to get all the manufacturing and the supply chains that you need in place to get those factories running quickly to hit the demand. So if you're in the market for something from a new automaker, just be prepared to wait a little bit and be prepared to have a little bit of a different experience. You know, you're not going to be able to go and buy one off the lot. What's more likely is you're going to have to place an order, which, you know, some consumers are going to like quite a bit because you'll get the exact car you want, no compromises, but there is going to be some waiting involved. And so you should be prepared for that.
We're talking about buying and selling cars with Jamie Page Deaton, editor-in-chief of Car Talk. You can join in with your questions and experiences, your thoughts on cars, 800-642-1234. Gary now in Richland Center. Gary, hi, go ahead.
Hi, I'm looking for a used vehicle. I got it narrowed down to two brands. I'd like to get either a Toyota Highlander or a Honda Pilot. Because of expense, I need to stay in the 2010 to maybe 2015 area. And I just want to know if you've got any advice on which, are there any issues with certain years or anything I should be on the lookout for? I'm not sure if they got timing belts or timing chains or just maintenance-type issues. Your advice would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Gary, I just want to repeat. You said you're looking at model years ranging from 2010 to 2015-ish?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Jamie.
Yeah, well, Gary, between the Highlander and the Pilot, you really can't go wrong. 2010 to 2015, you know, we're good year ranges for both of them. Both of them are very practical, good family SUVs. I think what it's going to come down to is the particular ones that you're looking at, making sure that they've been well maintained. Because when you're talking about, you know, timing chains versus timing belts and things like that, what really matters is how well has the car been taken care of? Has it been getting regular oil changes? Has it been hitting all of, you know, the maintenance intervals? And so if you can find one where you're confident that that has been met. And, you know, the years that you're looking at are going to be too old for any kind of certified pre-owned program. But, you know, if you can find one and, you know, make sure that you're taking it to an independent mechanic for a thorough going over before you, you know, sign on the dotted line, that's really is what's going to be the tiebreaker between those two models. And I mean, a little bit, if there's one that you happen to slightly prefer because, you know, you like the way it looks, or maybe the seat's slightly more comfortable, then go for that. But really do your homework on both of them. But overall, like, they're kind of six of one, half dozen of another. They're both great SUVs, and you really can't go wrong with either one.
Jamie, what about buying online, especially when you're talking about an era that is maybe, you know, 10 years previous?
Oh, gosh. So the buying online, you know, especially with used cars, where we've seen with Carvana and Vroom and all these new companies hitting the marketplace where they'll, you know, deliver the used car to your house, they'll buy your car from you and come pick it up. The good thing about those, I will say, those services is if you're buying from them, they typically have a return period. So what you can do is, even though you don't have the ability to really go over the car before you buy it, really read the fine print of the return period before you buy, so that you can get the car in, you can take it to your mechanic, and then if you're not satisfied with it, you can return it. The same goes, you know, for CarMax. CarMax, because of the limited supply of used cars, CarMax has had, you know, some issues, and a lot of people are, you know, familiar with CarMax, but they've had issues getting supply in, and so they're kind of trending towards some older vehicles that they wouldn't have necessarily looked at before. But CarMax is great. They have like a 300-mile, 7-day return period. So again, you know, if you're unsure about it or you're a little bit worried about it, go ahead and take it to a mechanic. Obviously, read the fine print, but take it to the mechanic. And if the fine print allows it and, you know, the mechanic finds issues, go back and, you know, return the car or make them make it right. I will also say too that I really do like CarMax for buying used cars because they have a very good warranty program that you can, you know, add on to it. And that helps give you a little bit more peace of mind. I know that I know several people who've gotten way more than the value of, or way more in value than what they paid for the CarMax warranty because it is so good. And it covers so many different things. Of course, you have to deal with the pain of taking your car to the shop and all that. But in terms of protecting the investment, I know a number of people have found that it has been really worth it. The other benefit there too of CarMax is you can look online nationwide, but I know I sound like a CarMax commercial.
Well, and I want to stop you right there, because is there an upside to that, being able to open up the market for you to see vehicles in places that are far flung, that are not near you? What does that
Absolutely.
Do?
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, if you're, you know, if you're in a, you know, the upper Midwest, right, you know, a big issue that cars have there is rust and wear and tear. So you can go get a car from California where rust is not going to be an issue, and you can, you know, get away from a lot of the problems that you might have from a car that, you know, spent its entire life in Wisconsin. The other thing is, if you're looking for a car that is not particularly popular in the area where you are, you know, that is another thing. You can open up the entire country and get it brought to you. You can also save potentially a little bit of money there. So, you know, if you're going after, let's say, a super small car that's not as popular in, you know, Wisconsin, if you're looking at something like a Hyundai Accent, for example, those tend to be more popular in more heavily populated urban areas. Well, they also tend to be less expensive. So you will have to pay, let's say, if you're dealing with CarMax, you know, or if you're dealing with Carvana or Vroom, you may have to pay a couple $100 to get it brought to your area. But honestly, considering what you'd save over the price of a, you know, a car that is local to you, it might actually be worth it. So if you're looking at these online services, make sure to really run the numbers and say, can I get, you know, a less popular, you know, maybe smaller and less expensive car brought to me and save money over just going to the dealer down the street and picking up what they have on the lot.
Jamie Page Deaton, editor-in-chief of Car Talk, our guide to the trends, the developments in the market for vehicles. Still time to join in with your questions, your comments on car buying and selling. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get tips on vehicle purchases and what to know about models and selections. Call in with your question, 800-642-1234. We have Jamie Page Deaton, editor-in-chief of Car Talk. Let's bring in Susan now in Madison. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. I have a question for Jamie. Are there used vehicles we should avoid considering if they were manufactured during the pandemic? And there were many supply chain issues?
That is, you know, that's a good question. And the answer is actually a pretty simple no. So in a lot of cases, the supply chain issues, what that led to is just a delay in manufacturing, not a missing of critical parts. You know, I will say in some cases, automakers did sell cars that, say, you know, should have had heated seats and they didn't have heated seats. So that if that's a deal breaker, you know, obviously check that out. But the auto industry is so regulated in the United States that even with the pandemic and the supply chain issues, you're not going to have a car on the road today that was manufactured without something critical, something that's going to impact the long-term health of the car or the safety of the car. So even if something was manufactured, you know, right there in the middle of 2020, you really should not be concerned about it. It is, you know, more than likely it is what, you know, it is fine. Obviously look out if there's extras like heated seats or a specific, you know, a specific infotainment feature that you really feel like you need, but for the most part, they're 100% fine.
Susan, appreciate the call. We heard from Vern and Boyd called and is concerned about a couple things. Vern says there is consistent recalls on airbags. What is going on there? And also says that the new engines are so complex. Vehicles today have computers and parts that are so specialized that only specialized technicians have the skills to work on them.
Yeah, that is an excellent point. You know, and we've been saying technicians instead of mechanics because cars are not as mechanical as they used to be. They're essentially computers that you drive. And, you know, I want to go back to that website I mentioned, safercar.gov. You know, I saw a study earlier this morning that there are so many cars with unaddressed recalls still on the road. And recalls are just a fact of life. And they can seem like, because we know more about them and there's more in the news, that they can seem like they are, you know, more frequent than they have been in the past. And to a degree, that is true because cars are more complex than they have been in the past. But when you're talking about recalls, everybody should go and register their vehicle's VIN at safercar.gov and sign up for recall alerts. And if you get a recall alert, you know, from the manufacturer, do not ignore it, even if it seems like something small. So, you know, back around in 2010, Ford had a recall that was focused on the cruise control, and people would get the recall notice and say, well, I don't use the cruise control. I'm going to ignore this. Mm. Well, what happened was the cruise control system, while the car was parked, could cause a fire. And there are a number of houses that burnt down because people ignored the recall and then just, you know, parked the car in their garage. You know, I think the airbag recalls are some of the most heartbreaking because here this is a feature that's supposed to save your life and it can grievously injure. And in a lot of cases, people have been killed by these faulty airbags. So really, the minute you get a car, register the VIN at safercar.gov, stay on top of recalls. And this goes, you know, not just for cars, but for, you know, baby products and all sorts of consumer products. Register that, you know, you get the new blender, register it with the manufacturer so they can reach out to you if they need to get a recall, because it is really important for your safety. Even if it seems something minor, the car is so complex, it can lead to a waterfall of issues that, you know, leads to something that can be tragic. Mm-hmm. So safercar.gov, register your VIN, always stay on top of recalls. And the other thing that consumers should know is if you get a recall, the fix is free. It costs you time out of your day to take it to the dealer to get it fixed. But it doesn't cost you any money. So just because you get a recall on Lotus, don't feel like you're, you know, suddenly getting a bill for something that's not your fault. The manufacturer will cover the cost of the recall. You don't have to worry about that.
And we have a link to safercar.gov at wpr.org/mornings as well. Let's go to Don in Milwaukee. Don, hi.
Hey, say I got a little problem maybe you can resolve for me. My neighbor down the block is selling a car. And I'm interested in it. The neighbor on the other side is telling me, ooh, that's a bad year for that particular model. What it is a Honda CR-V 2008 with about 100 and maybe 20,000 or so miles on it. So I need the opinion of an expert.
I have to say I'm not expert in the 2008 Honda CR-V, but what I would do if I was you is I would go Google 2008 Honda CR-V problems and see what's there. See what issues people are having with it. Pay attention to the mileage that people are reporting these problems that they might have. So maybe it's not something that comes up to 200,000 miles. Maybe it's something that happened at 50,000 miles and your neighbor probably already had it addressed. But, you know, go and talk to your, you know, get a list of things that concern you. Go and talk to your neighbor and say, hey, have you had this? Have you had that? You know, tell me about the maintenance. Do you have records? And then if you can, take it to an independent mechanic and give it a good going over. I will say, though, that like at 120,000 miles, at least for most Hondas, that thing's just getting warmed up. So I would still do your due diligence. And, you know, I would also, if you want to continue to have a good relationship with your neighbor, if the car doesn't end up being so good, you know, you might end up sacrificing that friendship and that good, you know, neighborly relationship you have. But do your due diligence like you would with any other car. But I don't know of any reason why that particular year of the CR-V would be bad, so long as you do your homework with it.
Don, thank you so much. Really quickly here, Kim in Appleton wants to know, how do you get these new EVs serviced, like the Teslas and the Rivians? Can you go to your neighborhood mechanic?
Probably not. Okay. Those, because they are fairly new, those are going to have to be serviced likely at the dealer. But the good news is, EVs have so many fewer moving parts than gasoline-powered cars that they need a lot less service and a lot less maintenance. So, you know, you just take the fact that you don't really have to do oil changes on them. You take that off the table and already there's something you don't have to do every, 5,000 miles or 3 months or whatever your current car is recommending. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that you would do at your neighborhood mechanics, you don't have to do with an EV. But for the time being, until independent shops are really starting to catch up, and I will say we are starting to see some really good independent specialty shops for EVs. In fact, some of them will even take your existing car and convert it to an EV, which I think is just fantastic. Yeah, it is really, really cool. But they require less maintenance, but you are going to have that maintenance and that work done for now at the dealer. But the time is coming when you won't have to.
Well, Jamie, so much fun. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Jamie Page Deaton is editor-in-chief of Car Talk. And if you missed any part of the conversation, you can go to our archives later on today. We'll have it uploaded, wpr.org/mornings. Go back and listen. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.